Hello, friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I feel like giving myself a trophy this morning because I woke up at 6 a.m. I swear to God, I give myself a little golden Greek figurine idol with an inscription morning champion on it if I could. Because waking up early in the morning is a sign, usually, that things are going pretty good in your life. That you're turning a corner, you know? If you start sleeping late, I've just been sleeping late, and anytime I'm doing that, sleeping late is hitchhiking on the devil's highway. You might be okay for a little while, but eventually you're going to get picked up by a demon and carried into hell. Not all the time. I know some people just aren't morning people, but I love it anytime I can wake up early. I'm going to read this article now. My brother sent me this. I'm very excited about this. So I'm probably going to rant a little bit and get a little shrill. But that's normal, I guess, for this podcast. New York Times article, March 3rd, 2014. The article is by Benedict Carey. LSD reconsidered for therapy. He heard about the drug trial from a friend in Switzerland and decided it was worth volunteering, even if it meant long, painful train journeys from his native Austria and the real possibility of a mental meltdown. He didn't have much time, after all. In traditional medicine, it had done nothing to relieve his degenerative spine condition. I'd never taken the drug before, so I was feeling, well, I think the proper word for it, in English, is dread, said Peter, 50, an Austrian social worker, in a telephone interview. He asked that his last name be omitted to protect his identity. There was this fear that it could all go wrong, that it could turn into a bad trip. On Tuesday, the Journal of Nervous and Mental Disease is posting online results from the first controlled trial of LSD in more than 40 years. The study, conducted in the office of a Swiss psychiatrist near Bern, tested the effects of the drug as a complement to talk therapy for 12 people nearing the end of life. Most of the subjects had terminal cancer and several died within a year after the trial, but not before having a mental adventure that appeared to have eased the existential gloom of their last days. Their anxiety went down and stayed down, said Dr. Peter Gasser, who conducted the therapy and followed up with his patients a year after the trial concluded. The new publication marks the latest in a series of baby steps by a loose coalition of researchers and fundraisers who are working to bring hallucinogens back into the fold of mainstream psychiatry. Before research was banned in 1966 in the United States, doctors tested LSD's effect for a variety of conditions, including end-of-life anxiety. But in the past few years, psychiatrists in the United States and abroad, working with state regulators as well as ethics boards, have tested ecstasy-assisted therapy for post-traumatic stress, and other trials with hallucinogens are in the works. The effort is both political and scientific, said Rick Doblin, executive director of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, a foundation that has financed many of the studies. We want to break these substances out of the mold of the counterculture and bring them back to the lab as part of a psychedelic renaissance. Before taking LSD, the 12 patients in the Swiss study met with Dr. Gasser in his office for two or more sessions to get acquainted. The trial called for two drug-assisted courses of therapy separated by a couple of weeks. The drug's effects would last up to 10 hours, after which the patient would sleep on a couch in the office, attended at all times by the therapist or an assistant. I told them that each session would be right here in a safe environment, and I am part of it, Dr. Gasser said. I can't guarantee you won't have intense distress, but I can tell you that if you do, it will pass. And so they did, and indeed it passed, though not always easily. Many wept, most squirmed. One 67-year-old man said he met his long-dead estranged father somewhere out in the cosmos, nodding in approval. After about 2 months of weekly therapy, the 8 participants who received full doses of LSD improved by about 20% on standard measures of anxiety. The participants, by and large, considered the therapy worthwhile. It's a proof of concept, Dr. Doblin said. It shows that this kind of trial can be done safely and that it's very much worth doing. Peter, the social worker, agreed. I will say I've been more emotional since the study ended, and I don't mean always cheerful, he said, but I think it's better to feel things strongly, better to be alive than to merely function. Yes! Wow, man. Wow. What a great article. What a vindicating study for all of us who have had positive results in our lives from taking psychedelics like LSD and DMT and ecstasy. Really vindicating, man. One major annoyance that I have in my life are those people who like to jam all substances that cause any kind of alteration in our perceptual mechanisms into the category called drugs. Not drugs as in like drugs in a nice, clean, normal font, but drugs in the Frankenstein dripping, green, oozing death font. Drugs. Ooh, drugs. It's a real annoyance to me. I was having a conversation. I was around one of these tyrannical fucks at breakfast once. And I think I was talking about how I tried DMT and it had this really positive effect on my life. I'd gotten more clean, started exercising again. It just had been a very positive experience for me. And his response immediately, without even looking up from his shitty omelet, was, "You sound like a drug addict." Or maybe he said junkie. Or maybe he said, actually, he said druggie. "You sound like a druggie." Now, that really pissed me off. I didn't directly confront the person because I figured, what's the point? This is a person who's in, a sober person who's in some kind of, clearly in some kind of 12-step program. And the reason that they're saying druggie is because they're afraid when they hear things about the drugs like DMT or LSD or mushrooms or any of the psychedelics can have a positive benefit. They get afraid because it gives them some, they're afraid that it's going to plant some seed in them that's going to lead to a relapse. And they're going to be back living in whatever shitty town they were in when they got addicted to whatever shitty drug and were in whatever crappy relationship they happened to be in. They're afraid that they're going to slide right back down to that place and everything that they have would be lost. So I get it. It's a fear-based thing. But it's really annoying to me when people do that. It's lazy. It's lazy to jam psychedelics into the same category that you put heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine or any of the other awful, life-destroying, addictive drugs. And studies like this, when they come out, they really shine a harsh light on those people. Because it's one thing to be a sober person. I have many sober friends. And to understand that for whatever reason, you punched your ticket and you can't screw around with any kind of substance at all, except maybe coffee or cigarettes or antidepressants or sugar. Or whatever the government says that you can take. It's one thing to be one of those people and just realize, I can't do it. I'm afraid. Maybe it won't do anything. Maybe it'll have a, maybe it will, maybe it, there's a chance that it could help me, but there's also a chance that I take it and then I start doing cocaine again. So I'm not even going to fuck with it. I'm just going to be sober. I managed to be sober this long. I don't need to screw with that. But if it's helping other people, great. That's one thing. Fine. I love that type of person. But to be the other type of person, which is to take your own personal tragedy that happened when you came into contact with a substance, and you didn't just come in contact with the substance, you came in contact with a group of people using that substance in an irresponsible way. You came in contact with a lifestyle that was negative and was associated with that substance or a series of substances. It wasn't just the substance by itself. But because you got stuck in a kind of cyclone of self-destruction that had as one of the components of it a substance or a series of substances, you then apply that to every single person around you. And you project your fear mentality onto the people around you who are just trying to improve themselves. open their eyes a little bit more, shake off the darkness, break out of the thought prisons. It's annoying to me, but it's more sinister when you imagine a person like that impacting or influencing other people around them in a more profound way. I hear something like that erupting out of the lips of a loon, and all I do is get secretly angry and hold that in. But what about the people that get around this person or people like that, and they're not addicts. They haven't become addicted to anything, but they avoid using the substance like LSD or mushrooms or a psychedelic in a responsible way because they're afraid that they will destroy their lives. This is a ghost story, you know? These fucking fascist sober people, not all sober people. Again, let me reiterate. Most sober people that I come in contact with, their lives are flourishing and they're not judgmental at all about people who use substances. Even the bad ones, they just figure they're going to stop when they're going to stop. But you run into these fascist, ghost story telling, terrified people, and they spread their sickness all throughout the world. Studies like this come out and refute what those people say. And it's beautiful, but it's also kind of infuriating when you consider the fact that with LSD, there is a mandatory minimum prison sentence for that substance. That means that if you have a certain amount on you, you go to jail for 10 years. They put you in a dungeon for 10 years. And then when you consider that here is a substance that in this limited study is showing benefit for people who are close to death, but you know that it's been proven to have it to be beneficial in many, 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 many other ways. Only those ways have happened outside of the lens of science because of a ridiculous prohibition placed upon the substance by a terrified government that thought that the substance was turning everybody into Charles Manson. So I like that part of what this doctor Gasser said said, you know, take it out of the counterculture. I understand that, you know, take it out of the shady darkness of, you know, of the demographic of people that are using the drug both responsibly and irresponsibly, because you can certainly use LSD or psychedelics in an irresponsible way that can cause a lot of problems for you. That's true. Studies like that show how to take the drug. You know, this is the classic babysitter situation. Gasser was just being the babysitter. Someone takes the psychedelic and someone's nearby to make sure they're okay and to reassure them when things get difficult. It's responsible. That's the responsible way to do drugs like that. But because there's been a prohibition, these ways of doing drugs like that aren't known by everyone. You have to stumble upon the drug in some covert way, the whole time feeling like a bank robber or a criminal, because the drug has been categorized in the same way that heroin is categorized. So subliminally, you're being taught that this drug has within it the same potential for destroying your life that fucking heroin has. Instead of what studies like this reveal, which is that the drug can, when used responsibly, relieve anxiety for people who are about to die. And if you can relieve the anxiety of people who are about to die, think about how beneficial it would be for people who have an entire life in front of them. The substance has the potential to dissolve the thought prisons that so many of us get trapped in, the identity prisons, where you've decided this is how you are. And you've become just sealed up in the castle of yourself. And locked into some cycle. This, a drug like LSD or DMT or mushrooms, it can, when used responsibly, get you the hell out of there. It can dissolve the thought prison, and all of a sudden you get to have a whole new life. It's that powerful a substance. So congratulations to Dr. Gasser and to Doblin and to all the other people who are who have managed to get studies like this to happen. It's very exciting to me. Very vindicating. It's just so annoying when you've come into contact with something that has had a positive impact on your life. And the very act of talking about it will make certain people around you roll their eyes at the best, and at the worst, accuse you of being a junkie. Try to get addicted to LSD. I'm sure it can happen, but good luck. You really, to get addicted to heroin, you know, you pop the spike in a few times and you're going to get chemically addicted to the substance. But if you wanted to get addicted to LSD, man, you've got to, like, you probably have to make the Grateful Dead start touring again. You got to bring Jerry Garcia back to life. There's a lot of steps that you'd have to take if you wanted to get, I'm sure that there's a psychological addiction that could happen to anything, but man, you can't get physically addicted to LSD. You can't. Love it when stuff like this comes out. It's very exciting for me. This, along with the potential for the legalization of marijuana. Who knows, friends? We could be on the verge of a renaissance. Or a nuclear holocaust. Or maybe a nuclear holocaust is a form of renaissance. Who knows? Anyway, very excited about this study and very excited about our guest today, Sam Tripoli. We're going to dive into this podcast, but first, some quick business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you want to support this podcast, there's an easy way to do it. Go to DuncanTrussell.com and click on our Amazon portal the next time you're going to buy something from Amazon. I have a friend, a very healthy friend, who has been introducing me to a lot of types of vitamins and crazy, weird stuff that I've never taken before. I've been drinking liquid chlorophyll. It's awesome. It looks like it came out of a barrel outside of a nuclear facility. And I don't know, maybe she's like telling me I stink because it's a natural deodorizer. It's like an internal deodorizer. She doesn't have to tell me. I know I stink. But it's delicious. What's weird is it's complete, comes out of plants, tastes great. It's delicious. And I don't know. Maybe it's part of why I woke up at 6 a.m. this morning. Who knows? Could be a placebo effect, but if it's a placebo effect, it's delicious. You want to order liquid chlorophyll? You can get it at Amazon.com, along with pretty much anything else that you could possibly want. And when you go through our portal, they give us a very small percentage of whatever it is that you buy. It doesn't cost you anything, but it definitely helps support this podcast. We're also brought to you by Shore Design T-shirts. Shore Design T-shirts. By the way, we've got a new shipment of T-shirts coming in, so check our shop. Shore Design T-shirts makes all of our shirts. And the reason I use Shore Design T-shirts to make the Duncan Trussell Family Hour shirts, the beautiful shirts, the logo shirt, the weird symbol shirt, the... Just go look on the shop. It's hard to describe these things. The reason I use Shore Design T-shirts is because their shirts are so incredibly soft. The softness of these shirts is what I imagine it would feel like if you lay on the moon naked. No one's ever done that in all of human history. No one has ever experienced what it would be like to lay down in that soft, soft moon dust and feel it against your bare ass. It would feel so good. I just know it. I just know it would feel so good to be in a low gravity environment with dust particulates rising up around your balls. I just know it would feel good. I don't know why, but instinctually I know it would feel good. Problem is, we have not figured out how to get to the moon. Except by starting a massive government agency. There's no personal moon rockets. So nobody's going to fly up there and get to do nude snow angels in that sweet moon dust. But there is a way you can experience what it would be like to lay nude on the moon. And that's to go to SureDesignT-Shirts.com and order one of these shirts. And put the shirt on and then lay in your carpet or on your floor and close your eyes and listen to moon music, which is basically anything with chimes. And you will know what it's like to lay nude on the moon. SureDesignT-Shirts.com. Go to SureDesignT-Shirts. Put my name in Duncan. You will get 10% off these wonderfully soft shirts. Lay outside and look up at the moon while you're wearing one of these shirts. And just imagine you're up there, floating there, half floating, half napping. That's Shirt Design T-Shirts. We're also brought to you by Audible. I keep forgetting to do this one. Audible has shitloads of great audiobooks. I've been listening to. The cool thing about audiobooks is that they last for a long time. One audiobook is usually like 30 or 20 hours of entertainment. So it's great. You know, if you're a busy person and you've got a lot to do, like, and you want to combine reading with exercise, audiobooks can make that happen. You know, back in the old days, you'd look over and somebody be like reading a magazine or a newspaper on the treadmill. And it's, how are you doing that? I don't understand that, because when I'm running, I have to like look straight ahead, fixate on something straight ahead and just plow forward, or I'll get off the treadmill. But you see these people just sweating into their newspapers, and it's mysterious. Also, I'm so clumsy. If I'm running on the treadmill trying to read, the book's going to fall on the treadmill and probably get stuck in the gears of the treadmill, and I'm going to fall off, and it'll be embarrassing. I have been known to fall off treadmills. So an audiobook, you can climb on the treadmill and educate yourself and expand your mind while moving in the direction of getting that sweet six-pack that you've always dreamed of. And when the six-pack comes, it's going to come after you've gotten smarter. So you're going to be an intellectual with a six-pack. And what's hotter than that? Does that even exist? Of course it does. That's really dumb to say. Plenty of smart people with six-packs. Sure, they're out there. Audibletrial.com/family hour. Sign up for a trial membership. You get a free audiobook. You can cancel the membership and you still get to keep the audiobook. So you can get 30 or 50 hours of a book for free just by going to audibletrial.com/family hour. Sign up and we get $15 every time somebody signs up. And finally, please visit our shop. Buy one of our shirts. Parade around your neighborhood wearing a Duncan Trussell Family Hour shirt. Maybe you'll meet somebody who listens to the podcast and you guys can make babies together. And then you could name the baby after me, because I don't know if I'm going to have a baby in this incarnation. It'd be nice to have a few babies out there that were a result of this podcast, because at least then I could figure in some way I've continued the genetic line. At least, I don't know. Maybe don't have babies. I don't know. The next time you're thinking about having a baby, take a long, take take a long, hard look at Putin. He's actually kind of cool. The problem with Putin is, anyway, I don't know if he's cool. I don't know what's going on in the world. I'm not going to go on some weird rant about the apocalypse right now. Have a baby, please. Name it after me. Name your babies after me. And if you're not going to do that, at least buy one of our shirts. You can go to DuncanTrussell.com, go to the shop. Plenty of shirts there for you to check out. And of course, you can donate if you feel compelled to do so. And thanks to all of you who have donated and continue to donate and support this podcast. Great. All right. That's it. We did it. Now, everyone, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast for the second time, the great comedian and wonderful person, Sam Tripoli. Follow him on Twitter at Sam Tripoli. Go to his website, samtripoli.com. He's got some dates coming up. You can go to duncantrussell.com, look in the comments section of this podcast, and there'll be links to get tickets for his upcoming shows up in Seattle and in that area. All right, everybody. Hare Krishna. God bless you. Open your heart. Send out your sweet love tendrils to embrace this wonderful man, Sam Tripoli. Sam Tripoli, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. God damn, it's good to see you, man.
It's good to be back with the family.
It's good to have you back.
I miss my family.
I miss you. You got a great vibe, man. I've been looking forward to this podcast.
That's what I was trying to talk to you about. You have a great vibe.
Oh, thank you. What is that? What do you think a vibe is?
It's just the energy you put off, and sometimes it can be dark energy, sometimes it can be good energy.
Right.
When it's good energy, it's a vibe. You give off a good vibe. That's why you get the chicks.
You give off a good vibe
too,
man. Yes.
I feel like I give off a crazy vibe.
No, man. You've got the no, you can it's just like it's so simple. You know the idea where people say the universe only functions as a binary, ones and zeros, so it's like the universe only understands like yes and no. Which is why these are like the positivity people are really into not saying shitty things about yourself.
Which is Los Angeles.
Which is Los Angeles. Positivity people?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. And it's not just Los Angeles. It's like occultists. It's like anybody.
Just good. Put out good energy.
Yes.
I like to talk some shit once in a while.
Me too.
Once in a while, I like to talk some shit.
Me too.
It's very important that you, especially in Los Angeles, that you find some friends who you could talk shit with. And their minds don't blow, freak out.
Yes.
Because you can freak some people out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
You're like, what's up with this? And they're like, hey, negative energy, bro.
Oh, that's
and they just
the
run
worst.
Away.
There's like, nothing more horrible than when you realize you're with a fucking positivity cop.
Yeah. That's my biggest thing. I try to put out the positive. The big thing I work on right now is like, what is my role in what's going on in my life? I refuse to be the person. Listen, let me tell you something. I had a really weird moment the other day.
Yeah.
It was during the Olympics. It was towards the end of the Olympics, and they were doing the Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding story. And they're interviewing Tanya Harding, and she says to her, all I ever wanted to do was just do me, be honest, be that person. I just want to do my own thing, and nobody liked it. And I was just like, oh, my God. I say that all the time. I think the same way Tanya Harding, you know, and it's just like,
nothing's wrong with that saying. It's just Tanya Harding was a little unscrupulous.
But then she goes on and she blames everybody for everything. And I just don't want to be that guy.
Right.
I know my role and where I am and what I am. And that's kind of what I got, what the point of that was.
I think that's why you got a great vibe, man, is because you're somebody who knows that. Not everybody knows that. A lot of people are teetering in between who they want to be and who they know they are. And they're always trying to be who they want to be and they can't come to terms with who they are.
Yeah.
And that creates that awful situation when you get around a fucking chameleon, when you get around somebody who's always shifting their form to suit certain situations. We all do that a little bit, you know, but
I mean, you're catching me on a good day. Talk to me literally 3 days ago. You wouldn't understand what I was saying because the shotgun would be so deep in my mouth.
Why were you depressed?
It's just something that this town it's just LA. You get depressed. You start.
You want to hear something crazy? I just had a conversation last night. This guy said the coolest thing ever, man. I never thought of it. It's really cool. But he was saying that he had been outside and he touched a flower or touched some kind of greenery or something, right? And had this weird telepathic link with the earth. And at that moment, understood that the earth was afraid too. It was really cool because it's this idea that this anxiety that we experience is that everybody tries to hide, low-level anxiety that you pretend is not there, high-level anxiety, catastrophic thinking, fear feelings.
Yes.
You are actually experiencing not just your own personal fear, but the waves of fear radiating out of the earth.
I agree with that.
As it deals with all these weird bugs building skyscrapers on top of
that, there's a whole theory that the earth is a living organism.
Yes.
And, you know, we're like a cancer.
Yeah. That's a funny thing, you know. It's like when people go down that road, the cancer, human cancer road. I understand it because you could see that we do devastate planet Earth and everything like that. But I like George Carlin's take on it better,
which was
maybe the Earth wants plastic. Maybe that's why it made humans, is because it wants plastic. It just wants a bunch of fucking plastic. You think you're that significant that you're a fucking cancer that's going to destroy a planet? This planet has been smashed by meteors.
Oh, yeah.
Extinctions are happening all the time. It's a great bit, but the whole point is humans are so prideful that we like to believe, oh, we're going to destroy this Earth. And Carlin's joke is, Earth is fine.
Yeah.
Humans are fucked, though.
Yeah. Well, it's going to come along. It's we're going to get wiped out, but the Earth will still be here.
The Earth, look at Chernobyl, man. Chernobyl, massive nuclear disaster. And if you look at videos of Chernobyl now, flourishing wildlife, trees growing, it's beautiful. The Earth is fine. It's like, oh, this is all you can throw at me?
Yeah.
I've taken impacts from deep space, you fucking monkeys. Go ahead, detonate your nuclear missiles, radiate the soil. Watch what happens. Because for the Earth, a million years is just a blink of the fucking eye.
100%. There's only one thing you can destroy planet Earth, and that's the sun. If the sun just exploded and ate everything around it, that's the only thing that could destroy. But we're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
That's another thing, man. It's just like, just to realize that, what you are in the universe.
Yes. Yes. Know? To realize what you are in the universe is insignificant relative to the size of the universe. But there's another way to look at that too, man, which is like, because there is that thing, like, understand, I've seen the JPEGs of, like, the arrow pointing to this tiny little dot.
Carl Sagan.
It's Carl Sagan. That's everything. That's everything right there, this tiny little dot in comparison to the whole universe. But, you do have to deal with the fact that, like, if we were to zoom in on you, and get a quantum microscope on you, then you would be you would be a universe with tons of little dots in it that probably were harboring life too.
Yeah.
So you're a walking universe on your own. So
yeah,
it's like
the little bug that maybe crawls on your arm. That is that bug's universe.
Yeah.
And you're this humongous thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't even know you exist. And it's just walking around you. You're like little bug, smack it.
Yeah, like you're crabs. Like if you have crabs.
Everything's relative. Is that what we're saying?
We're saying that you are simultaneously the most significant and least significant thing walking around. It's this fucking binary. It's the yin-yang, man.
Yeah.
It's this like combination of the light and the dark. It's like, yeah, this is called, there's this great Hare Krishna term for it, which is describing God, and I can't remember the name of it. I'll mispronounce it, but it's like asinka sinka beta tattva or something. And it
makes sense.
Simultaneous oneness and difference. So it means that God or the universe, the intelligence of the universe, you're a pixel in this thing, and it's simultaneously this one thing, which we can never understand. In the same way, you're a cell in your liver.
It's almost like light bright. Maybe you're just one light plug by yourself,
exactly.
But together. You make a whole little drawing or
whatever. That is exactly it. And light bright is the best way to describe it, man. Fucking Light Brights.
Yeah.
Light Brights. I haven't thought about Light Bright in so long, but man, I used to love that thing.
I loved Light Bright, man. It was so incredible. It was really mind-blowing at the time.
You plug in those little jewels and it glows, and they had patterns that you could like build your own things, and there was always something spooky about the Light Bright though, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was like a baby's first acid trip.
Yeah, it was kind of psychedelic. It definitely wasn't originally made for kids, that's for sure.
Right.
Somebody just tripping on Sandoz acid back in the 50s and figured out if you started plugging lights.
Well, most of your kids' toys are leading you towards doing hallucinogenics and all the psychedelics and all that stuff. If you really think about it. I mean, if you look at cartoons, they are giant acid trips.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking to animals.
Yes.
You're flying on butterflies.
Yes.
It's all a giant acid trip.
Yeah, you're right, man. Kids seem to really love that stuff, too, don't they?
And that's maybe why we do drugs and all that stuff, is to get kind of back to that kind of cheerful playfulness.
Yeah, like our original state before we got brainwashed by reptilian demon people who made us think that the most important thing was imaginary numbers in our bank accounts. And now we wander around completely separate.
That is something that's very interesting, dude. You know, it's because, I mean, I'll be honest with you, in comparison to some of my friends, I haven't made the amount of money that a lot of my friends have made. But I have done. When I moved to LA, the things I wanted to do, I've done.
Yeah, you've got this successful show. You have a successful podcast. You're a respected comic. You're a brilliant comic. You developed your craft. You work super hard. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I dreamed of. I really don't remember dreaming of being, you know, the A-list actor in a movie. I don't think that was ever part of the plan.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just have a selective memory at this moment, but I don't remember that. I remember freedom. To do what I want to do, to say what I want to say, and to just make enough money to not have to clock in somewhere. And if you do clock in somewhere, that's nothing against that, because, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think we've gotten away from the respect of having an honest job sometimes and just, you know, just going to work. And if that's what you enjoy doing, you know, I really enjoy going on podcasts of people who kind of are in the middle of, you know, the Midwest, the South. And, you know, they got their day job and then they just do their podcast.
Yeah.
And like, how cool is that?
Very cool.
They're not really doing a podcast so they could tour off it. They're just doing it to just because they enjoy doing it. And I think that's pretty damn amazing.
You've got everything that you want. But 3 days ago, you were suicidally depressed.
Suicidally depressed, dude. Depressed.
This is the thing, man. I think that that's such a brave thing to fess up to, because a lot of people, they don't do that. They will become suicidally depressed, and then they'll pretend that they're fine. And they'll think, God, I mean, I have all this stuff. You know, I did this and that, and I have my freedom, and I have this and that, and everything's going great. But yet somehow I'm still feeling miserable.
Yes.
Somehow. And then that becomes a really perplexing moment for a lot of people, because you begin to realize, like, oh, all the shit that I've been throwing at this thing to try to fix it is not fixing it at all.
All the
medicine recommended by the world, all the medicine recommended by society is not curing this specific sort of inflammation or disease or whatever the thing is that I have. So the big question is, can it be cured? Can this dis-ease, this sense of uneasiness, this feeling of anxiety, a feeling of depression or dread or the darkness that creeps into the heart of most human beings, is it curable or is it something we just have to accept?
That's a great question, because I think about it all the time. I mean, I don't know. Granted, you know, I'm an adult right now. I haven't always been an adult. It just seems like there's more depression now than there's ever been.
Yeah.
Because I think there's more of this push when you're young to live your dreams, do this, believe in that, you know? And it's almost, I don't want to get super like negative, but it's almost like this big lie that we teach to children, you know, about, you know, the happiness versus like being at peace.
I believe I can fly.
Yeah, 100%.
I believe I can touch the sky.
Right?
I think about it every night and day. Yeah, that shit. The Disney propaganda.
Right? It's like there's this happiness out there that you got to chase, and then you get to a certain age, you're like, That's not how it works. Yeah. And then you get this depression because you're dealing with the programming of what you've been taught to think.
Yeah.
Instead of just being understanding peacefulness, which is really what I'm trying to get away getting to. When I look about where I am and where like I would like to be, that's what gets me depressed. Are there the options to still get to where I want to be? And then I realize yes. And I do it. And then it just keeps going. You know, that's kind of what it was.
Man, I was just listening to this. Well, it's a documentary the Ram Dass people just put out. It's really good. It's about faith. And there was a Sharon Salzberg. She's a Buddhist teacher. She was taught. She had this great way of putting like faith or the sense of that moment where the darkness kind of lifts is when you realize that the room that you thought that there was no exit from, suddenly you realize there's a doorway out, like a door opens up, that moment in life that happens where when you thought that there's no fucking way that you're going to get out of this predicament, you realize, oh my God, it's right there in front of me. And that right there in front of you feeling of excitement, that's really, that's the great blasphemy. That nobody wants to teach kids that you can be completely happy minus accomplishment right now.
Yeah.
That's like throwing a monkey wrench.
It really is about right now.
Yes.
And, you know, the biggest thing I've learned over the years is judging your insides by other people's outsides. People tend to do that a lot.
Wow.
You know, you're like, oh, man, I'm feeling all this. And then I look at that guy, and on the outside, he looks like he has it all. And you're like, that guy's so happy. He's got everything. Yeah. You don't know what's going through that guy. I mean, how many times have we seen the guy who has the world and just throws it all away?
Yeah. All the time.
All the time.
All the time. Look at all those fucking bankers committing suicide right now. You know about that? They're just throwing themselves off of buildings. Look at
it's got to be a horrible life. Like, man, I remember a couple years ago, I had something going on at the bank where my bank was like, they had this policy where they told you that they were helping you out, that you could overdraw your account.
Thanks.
But if you overdraw your account, it was like $50 a day to cover that overdraft.
Yeah.
Plus the money you know that you went over.
Loan sharking.
Yeah. So I didn't know that, and I didn't know my account went over. And like it was like a week till I learned that. Or something like it was some crazy number. It was got up to $300-$400 at the time. I didn't really have that.
Yeah.
And I went in there and like you tried to talk to this guy and connect on some kind of human level, and there was no connection there. Yeah. And he refused to connect.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, honestly, I can't feel really bad for you. I think you knew what you're doing. And you're like, man, on a human level, bro, do you know what you're saying to somebody? But just imagine that, like doing that to people over and every day, all the time. It's got to kill your soul.
Kills you. Yeah, it crushes you. Anything that involves dehumanizing the rest of your species so that you can make a fucking buck is, and especially the thing is, it's like, not only are you like generating cash from dehumanizing people, taking advantage of them, tricking them, luring them into weird little financial traps that most of them don't have the intellect or the discipline to even understand, but the money that you're generating and then you're using to try to pleasure yourself is not really pleasuring yourself because they get to the exact place that we were just talking about. Is they're floating out in their yacht on the Caspian Sea or wherever they float, or is they're like enjoying whatever, the most sumptuous thing ever after having backstabbed and sucked the lifeblood of their brothers and sisters. They float out there and they realize, I am just as miserable as I was when I started.
100%.
And that's the great deception. That's the great deception of the world. That's why in Hinduism they call the world Maya, illusion, active illusion. It's like it's a personified illusionary force that tries to distract you from realizing that in this very moment you are experiencing the pure, crackling potential energy of the entire universe, which is manifested as you. And that's it, man. What are you going to do after that? Like, really, what are you going to do after that? You're a billions of years old, what you're composed of, and you woke up. That's a good enough accomplishment. You can retire now. Congratulations, universe. You became aware of yourself.
Yeah.
Good
How
enough.
Crazy is that?
It's crazy, man. And the other thing is, man, the other thing that you have to realize on a less fantastic level is the thing I'm realizing is it's like I've started exercising again. I've started writing again. I've started focusing again. And I'd stopped all that because I got into my head and I started thinking like, well, you know what, man? If you're not in shape now, probably not really going to get in shape. It's kind of over for you because you should have been working out for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
There was a thing on Reddit, actually. Somebody, you know.
I need to go on Reddit more.
You got
to
go on Reddit.
I don't know why I have. I've never jumped on a Reddit band, and I need to.
You got
to
go on Reddit. It's they have this thing called, like, shit. Now, I can't believe I can't remember the name. It's like Advice Mallard. It's a duck that gives usually good advice. But this particular, it's like a picture of a duck. And then there's some cool advice. You know, like, don't put toothpaste on your asshole or some obvious thing.
You shouldn't?
I don't think you should. I think it'd burn. But really? It said, this bit of advice was, that is weird. Why wouldn't you do that? You brush your teeth.
Yeah.
There's, the advice was, start working out now. I wish I, 15 years, start working out before you get into your 30s because it's much harder to work out. Start working out now. And it's like, fuck that advice. Because that advice is like discouraging people from doing what.
Right.
The whole thing is, man, you right now.
There's no better time to start than right now.
This is it.
Whatever day it is.
Whatever day it is. Because it's like, just because you haven't doesn't mean. Then you're like, well, I'm just going to continue being a habit instead of just doing it now.
Yeah, just do it.
It's mind-blowing when you realize that there are no traps except the traps that you're imposing on yourself.
On yourself.
Yes.
That's so true.
It's wild. And every time you come to that is where happiness is. That's where, to me, is where I can like kind of start zooming in on some little bit of happiness, is just realizing, like, shit, I'm completely free right now. I can discard everything, throw off my persona, give up all the different ideas of the way that I am. Oh, this is who I am, I start things that I don't finish, and I don't really apply myself when things get too difficult. I just give up, or I smoke weed every day, or I don't smoke weed every day, or I wear.
Do you smoke weed every day?
I have been a little bit, but I actually moderate it. So I'll go on binges, like weed binges of smoking it every day, and then I'll stop for like a week, and then when I start screaming at people in rage, I'll get back on weed.
By the way, around this house, a lot of crazy drivers. People love to cut. Have you ever noticed this around here? It's happened to me 3 times just trying to get to your house.
Oh, man. No. There's always, like, every month, there's a monthly fucking wreck right out there.
It makes sense because people don't want to wait. If there's, like, a little break of the going through the intersection, people will try to do a hard left fast.
Yeah,
I saw it happen, like, 3 times. I'm like, people hitting each other.
Swarms of crazy drivers around here, man.
I'm sorry to get off on your awesome tangent. That was really good.
I don't
good.
Care. It's fine, man. But, yeah, that's the.
No, I back to the whole thing that I was talking about. I was so depressed, dude. I was crippling depressed. I didn't answer my phone. I didn't talk to anybody. Crippling depression. Yes. Thinking about maybe I should move home, start driving an Uber or a taxi. Was really in that mode to, like, call it a day.
Yes.
And then on Saturday night, I just literally had one of the best nights of my life. It just, a million things, great things happened that have never happened before. I got to do stuff that I've never been able to before, and was blessed to get access to go do, and just, was back to being happy about what I have, man.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I know friends of mine who've made tens of millions of dollars that go to therapy.
Sure.
Tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That go to therapy. They've done what you think people want to do when they come to Los Angeles. And they're going to therapy.
Well, it can't work. You can't fix this thing. We're talking about there's a lot of different comparisons people use for this, like this problem. A lot of ways people try to describe this terrible problem. And some people say, that's it, man. That sense of disease that you think you can get rid of, that's called being a human being.
Yeah.
That anxiety feeling, that terror, that fear. These are the existentialists. This is like Camus, who's like, this thing that you're dealing with.
Camus a person?
Camus, yeah. Camus. He's an amazing writer, philosopher. He's fucking incredible,
That's
man.
That's a great name.
Camus, yeah. And he was a badass, traveled around the world, wrote all these great travel essays, wrote an incredible essay called The Myth of Sisyphus, which is basically sort of breaking down the story of Sisyphus, who has to push the boulder up to the top of the hill and watch it roll down and push it up and watch it roll down. And the comparison is that's what every human being either overtly recognizes, which is that it doesn't matter what you build in this world. It doesn't matter what you do. the sun's going to supernova.
Yeah.
And all your effort is going to be infinitely obliterated.
Yeah.
So realizing that, and not just the sun's supernovaing, it's just like you're going to expire. You're, you know, riding around in a sandwich that's outside of a Ziploc bag, and it's going to fucking rot.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with that, you know? You are a moldering sandwich laying on the beach of time, and you've got to deal with the fact that whatever you say or whatever you do, you're just surrounded by a lot of other moldering sandwiches.
Yep.
You're all going to turn into sand. There's going to be some kind of glaciation that's going to completely eradicate any trace of your civilization over the course of a few million years. And all is for naught if the purpose of your action is for some benefit for yourself or the insane notion that what you're doing is going to have some eternal or perpetual reward.
Yes.
So the question is, and that's where the depression and misery comes in, is when people realize that once they get all these big accomplishments, they're right where they started. Itch has not been scratched. It's like they spent 9 years, 15 years constructing the most high-tech, badass back scratcher that they think is going to get right into that place they can't reach and scratch that itch, and the pain and suffering and anxiety and guilt and horror of existing in the great void of space is going to be eradicated.
I agree.
They present them with this back scratcher. Here's your award. The back scratcher, and that fucking thing doesn't work at all. The itch is still there. It doesn't work. So this is where we get into the fucking meat of the thing, man, which is how the fuck do we find meaning in our lives in this kind of the dynamic?
Right. That is it. That is the whole thing. How do you find, and that's why I say is the difference between happiness and peace. You got, you know, the fine people think they gotta be, I think we teach children happiness all the time. You gotta be happy. Your job gotta make you happy. Find a happy job. Find a happy marriage. Find a, you know, it's like, and those aren't real things. I'm not saying you can't be happy in your marriage. That's not what I'm saying. But the notion that you have to be happy doing something is a very new thing. My grandfather, my father, their jobs, they weren't happy. They just went to work.
Yeah.
They were at peace at what they had to do. People have gotten away from that.
Right.
That the whole thing is that they got to be happy doing what they're doing.
Brilliant.
And it's just like, that's a totally the wrong way of looking at everything. You got to be at peace.
Happy.
Peace.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about happy, that fucking term, man.
Yeah.
Happy.
Yeah.
It's like French fries or something. It's like high carb, high calorie
and
shit.
And it's fleeting.
Absolutely.
It's here today, gone tomorrow.
Absolutely. Everything's fleeting, you know? That's true. And it's like, that. Then what ends up happening is like, people get on this very selfish quest for happiness.
Right.
You know, when you're around somebody and they've decided they're going to find themselves, but to find themselves somehow it means turning their back on everyone around them and their narcissistic, desperate quest to try to like... to try to like pleasure themselves under the spiritual, like they put it under the kind of spiritual thing. You just don't understand. I've got to find myself. Usually that just means going around and like fucking a bunch of people until they get like pregnant and want to shoot themselves.
Right?
It's like you're not going to find yourself. Good luck, man. Guess what? There ain't no self.
Yeah. What is find yourself? You're who you are.
Yeah, you want to find yourself, go look in the mirror. There you are.
Helping people, helping your fellow man is the most enlightening shit you could do.
Yeah.
And nobody does it.
Yeah. Do you do that?
I do charity events a lot. I've struggled with drugs and alcohol, man, a lot. I struggle a lot. And, through those programs, I meet a lot of people and I try to help them, you know, right their lives. From the grips of drugs and alcohol, best that I can, whenever I can. I'm not perfect at it, man. I know people who just like wake up at 7 in the morning and go feed homeless people all day, which is inspiring shit, man.
Yeah, man, but what you're doing is I mean, that is like, you're literally like wrenching people out of the grip of demons.
Yeah, man, I've been there, dude. I've been there where, you know, it's like, I'm blessed. I've never gotten to this some stuff where it's like, you know, like heroin.
What was your problem?
A bunch of blow,
cocaine,
coke, and Jack Daniels.
Wow,
I wanted to be was Led Zeppelin, dude.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Led Zeppelin on tour, and I lived in. And then you combine that with, you know, the whole just for lack of a better word, chuckle fuckers out there, you know, with all the girls who just came to the club and all that stuff. It just, it was just all my vices just kind of got together.
What a perfect storm. Funny, on cocaine.
Yeah.
Drunk.
Yeah.
With girls who want to fuck you.
Yeah.
And you know, people hear this. Some people might hear this and be like, what's wrong with that again?
Yeah. And there are some people who can put it in its place.
Yeah.
And are fine with it. And, you know, they can walk away from it and lose
it.
But when your job every day is to go to a club and be a liquor pimp.
Yeah.
All we do is sell booze, dude. That's all we are. We think it's about writing these jokes.
Yeah.
It's about pushing booze.
Booze hypnotists.
Well, yeah, that's all we are, is drink up, drink up, drink up. So these people going out to these comedy clubs, that is their night.
Yes.
That is the night they've been planning on for 2 weeks.
Yes.
We're going to go out, we're going to see the show, and it's going to be awesome.
Yes.
You know, especially if you come to a AAA live show.
Yeah.
I love chaos, bro. I give more bang for your buck, dude. Some people are just a little weird by it. They're like, oh, that's a little too much. Not me, dude. Short of burning the place down, I just want chaos.
Yeah, you're one of these. You're the type of comic that, like, you're burning, like, you must be burning, like, marathon-level calories up
there. I love it,
you're
dude.
You're just exploding with energy up there. It's amazing to watch, man.
I love it.
Yeah, and you...
No show's ever the same.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah, man. I love the way you do stand-up. It's really, like, it's so energetic. You crush. It's really cool, man. You're impossible to follow.
No, not at all, dude.
Kind of.
Not at all,
kind
man.
Of. Yeah. You're great, though, man. You're really, really good at it. And yeah, so it's not like you're just fucking pimping booze, man. You're making people happy.
Right, at the end of the day, you gotta sell liquor, you know, which is fine. But the reason I bring that up is, like, so people go watch show, and then afterwards, they want to keep the party going. So that's, like, every night. You know, I don't do stand-up in libraries.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do stand-up at Starbucks.
And if you're an addict, there's no better excuse to continue using than to tie it in with your career. Like, so many people, they have managed to tie in whatever their addiction is with... They've managed to trick themselves into thinking that the only way to extract milk from whatever nipple they're suckling at is to be simultaneously poisoning themselves or putting some kind of chemical into their bloodstream. That's for sure, man. That's for sure. It's a tricky son of a bitch.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
You have to be very careful. You have to be very... very careful.
And plus, dude, I do like the crazy, like, I'll do a naughty show here and there, and then that just takes whatever we're talking about, amplifies it by 1,000.
But you must always be dealing with this the sucking, with the thing trying to pull you
back. Oh, yeah.
I
gotta battle it all the time, man.
You do a show with porn stars, and even though mostly porn stars are known for their sobriety, some of them aren't sober at all. A lot of them are really into drugs.
And well, you know what's so funny about that is that they're weird people. They're interesting people because it's now at a point. Porn is a lot like comedy in that there used to be this Wild West time.
Yes.
Where it was like all the rebels and all the crazy and everything went nuts and everybody died of drug overdoses.
Yeah.
And it was like live now. Die young,
yes.
You know. Then now it's like this. There's a very much a corporate feel to it where like, gotta go to work. I got a job. I got to focus. I've heard of like porn star agents drug testing their clients. They flunk drug tests. They're kicked out of the agency. It's a very focused thing. I know. I'm not saying they're perfect people, and I'm not saying they're bad people either. They are who they are. They really are business people, man.
I always wonder that, man. Like, when I watch porn and I, like, you see, like, a professional porn star fucking, and, like, when you watch that, you're thinking, like, this is the strangest business, man, because it's like they need to have an orgasm. Like, they need to come because people want to see that. They want to film the orgasm. You want to see the orgasm.
You mean the guy?
Both.
Right.
And so you're experiencing this kind of, like, the ultimate pleasure. You're screwing around with, like, the energy that you're dealing with is the energy that brings human life
right
into planet Earth.
Right.
You know, so you're playing around with like
life, the most primal things,
most primal life producing energy. And then if you don't really get into it in an authentic way, then your work isn't going to be as good as if somehow you've managed to completely be in the moment, throw off all of the societal pressures, forget about whatever it is that you have to do later that day or that week. You've got to be like, you, the best scene would be you having sex as though you were having sex with your soulmate,
right,
on the greatest
night
of your
life. They have to be into it.
They have to be into it.
Yeah.
So there's something in that act that is like so magical and so beautiful while being simultaneously blasphemous.
That's why they're award shows, bro.
Yeah. Because
they got to be the best actresses at it, and they got to sell it, and they got to be into it.
But that's a funny...
But you want to believe they want... that they're loving it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to believe that they're loving it?
Yes.
And they want to have it.
Yeah, I want to believe the people I'm having sex with are loving it, but
porn
quite often I suspect that's not the case.
I you know, something about... You know, there's I do the Naughty Show, which is kind of this premiere version of this kind of genre of comedy and entertainment.
Yeah.
In my eyes, I think it's the best of what it is.
Yeah.
And then there's offshoots. There's people who do their own things. And there's some people who go way more on the sex version of it.
Yes.
The Naughty Show isn't really, in my opinion, I could be wrong, isn't a sex show. My show is more about the rock and roll, the underground rock and rollers, the people who could never get on the Tonight Show, you know, that, you know, they're too crazy.
Yeah.
You know, they're not a corporate act. That's who the Naughty Show's about. But there's people who do their version of it. I'm not saying they're taking it from me, but by any means. I'm just saying they're doing their own version of it, and it's all sexual. It's
right.
Just all sex.
That is so boring.
It is boring because if you think about sex, man, how much of it is, how much of your day is dedicated to sex? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. It's not hours upon hours where it should be the whole thing you talk about.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people get away from, is that people think sex value... People value sex maybe, or put too much value on it, when it really is just a small part of what you do.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, it's incredible the weightiness of this, of the sex drive. It's incredible the gravity that it has, and especially when you do recognize that, man. I mean, you know, on my best day, we're talking like what, half an hour, half an hour, an hour with
a lot of foreplay, a lot of whips and chains.
Yeah. Yes. But you know, this is where you get into the... I had a philosophy professor in college who was into tantric sex, which is something a lot of people like to talk about that they don't know anything about, me included. Except we know like Sting was apparently into it. We know that like it's apparently a spiritual practice where you use sex to try to reach heightened states of awareness. And people have tantric sex for hours and hours and hours, just like meditation. So, like, the idea is like you sit in a certain position. You can see statues of it on the internet of like the tantric sex position, where like you're sitting down, your girlfriend's sitting on top of you. You're both kind of like, you know, sitting upright, looking into each other's eyes. And then you're going into this sort... You're not doing like in and out, in and out,
right,
in and out, in and out, you know, which is like what a lot of people do. You imitate... You watch porn,
yeah,
or you watch dogs fuck, and you think, okay, that's how you fuck, you know, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And in that process, your mind is going crazy. You're
right.
Like, oh, I don't want to come, don't come, don't come. You're feeling so good. And then you're like simultaneously like, oh my God, she's so beautiful. I hope this feels good for her. You're thinking about all those things. And then they're thinking about things too. They're worried about this and that. Or they say, it's a whole, it can become, if you're not careful, a neurotic mess. So like the this is a practice where you're like having sex slowly and breathing,
yeah,
and you're mirroring each other's breath. So like the idea is like you've created a circuit,
right?
Which is that your energy, when you are inside of some, I mean, just touching somebody, you've created a circuit,
right?
But when your cock is inside of them,
yes,
and you are on the precipice of potentially creating human life, you are engaged in one of the most potent occult rituals known to man. It's more powerful than building. It's the ritual that created electricity, because if not for that ritual, there wouldn't be a Tesla wandering around who came up with alternating current. It's the ritual that created the theory of relativity, and every human innovation started with cum. That's the way it goes, man.
You're such an interesting dude.
So when you're having sex, you're engaged in this super potent ritual, and so Tantra is this idea of, like, instead of, like, even trying to orgasm or come, you're just trying to focus on this connection that's happened.
Right.
This super high-powered, pleasurable connection. And then you learn how to, like, apparently breathe in. So, like, you have this circuit going, right? So that feeling, that thing that builds inside of you when you think you're about to come,
yeah,
that is an energy, right?
Yes.
So what you're trying to do is build that energy and then breathe it or move it.
It starts at your balls.
Move it into your first chakra. Your second chakra.
Your second chakra is in your balls?
Your first chakra is at the perineum, which is your taint. It's right between your balls and your asshole. And that chakra is all about, it's called the root chakra. It's all about being like, it's all about survival, right? And then I believe it's your second chakra is the sex chakra, right? And so you're like, but you're dealing, what you're trying to do here is you're trying to use that orgasmic energy to bring it through the entire chakra system and into the other person who's amplifying it. So you're sort of like creating this.
Oh, yeah, man. That's why boxers are told not to have sex before a match.
Right.
They don't want to give their chi away, man.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea.
The whole thing is that, you know, back in the day, women take men's cheese.
Cheese.
Chi, right?
Give me my cheese.
Give me the. It's all about the cheese.
Well, you know, man, there is something to be said for, like, for not always constantly, you know,
beating off.
People are worried about premature ejaculation, right?
Right.
But it's like, there's a lot of forms of premature ejaculation that don't involve jizz. Like, how many times have you said something before it was time for you to say it? Or how many times have you, like, not been strategic in some activity that you were engaged in? Or how many times have you gotten high too much when you should have been like, hold off. If you don't get high every
Story
day,
my
it's
life.
So much better. Right, right. So it's like, yeah, so Tantra is sort of the condensed encapsulation of a good life, you know?
Learning to control it.
Yeah. Learning to control it so that you can heighten the pleasure.
Yep.
Not control it so that you can, like, negate pleasure, like pleasure is bad. It's like, let's take a look at this fucking thing where usually when people get engaged in it, they lose their minds, literally. Oh my God. Oh God. Oh fuck. Oh my God. You're losing your mind. You're in the psychotic seizure of pleasure. It's like, calm down for a second.
Have you read the happiness hypothesis?
No, I haven't.
It's a really good book, and it basically talks about how, like, man is basically an elephant and a rider. Oh. And, like, your mind is the rider and your body is the elephant.
Yeah.
And the rider needs to learn how to control the elephant.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you're talking about. How you can control basically this primal part of yourself mentally.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, ejaculate too early or, you know, do anything to her, to control and be calm and be in the moment and not, like, overthink everything and, you know, just go spastic on something. That's really what it's about.
And giving
yourself.
The idea is, it's like, so like you're since this is engaged with another person, what you're trying to do is focus on just giving the pleasure to the other person, this energy, you're passing it to the other person. And then in the higher levels of it, apparently, you imagine that the other person is God. And so now you're like actually having sex with an entire universe, which you are. When you're having sex, you are putting your penis inside of something composed of atoms that are at least 6 billion years old. So you are like merging universes, which, by the way, that's what they say the fucking Big Bang was, is like there's millions of universes and one universe bumped into another universe and exploded into that universe. So when you're having sex, you know what you're doing? You're recreating the Big Bang in a micro.
Fireworks.
This is why porn is fascinating, and this is why there's a lot of controversy around porn, and this is why a lot of people...
Controversy?
Sure. People say that you shouldn't masturbate to porn all the time. It's like a rising trend out there. It's like people say that pornography is having negative impacts.
I can see it.
On people, because it's like, you know, I've talked to girls who, like, you know, they hook up with a guy finally, and the guy's like choking them or trying to like gag them with his cock or like trying to come in their eyeballs or like, you know,
oh.
what I mean? Being really rough with them right away without asking if this is cool, because the poor lonely reclusive son of a bitch has been getting conditioned by porn for the last 5 years and has actually managed to believe that that's what a woman wants right away.
I'll tell you, man, porn and romantic comedies have ruined relationships.
Wow, yes, yes.
I mean, people will never admit it, but romantic comedies are the same thing for women. I mean, this view of what romance should be and what love should be.
Yeah.
Like, daytime television is the same thing. I don't know if you watch a lot of daytime TV, but there's a lot of co-signing on women's bullshit. Now, I'll tell you, guys have a lot of bullshit, you know, and that's for sure. But there's a lot of co-signing on bullshit, too. You know, it's like you watch some morning talk show. I was talking to Kurt Fox about this. It's like, you know, these daytime talk shows, you have some woman who, like, married a guy at, like, 100 pounds and then ballooned up to 300. And then they bring the guy and it's like, why aren't you making love to your girlfriend? And they put it on him. They should accept her however she is. But it's like, well, what about his needs and then what he's attracted to and all that stuff?
Yeah.
It's a co-signing of the bullshit, which is kind of what porn does for guys. Like, this whole thought. Like, most of your pornography is like, this chick needs dick.
Yeah.
She needs dick or she'll die.
Yes.
And you got to give her the dick, and she's so thankful. Like, she didn't want it at first, but when she got it, she realized how great it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just total bullshit, too. You know, it's like, so it goes both ways in that, but it's like a lot of co-signing off on bullshit.
Yeah, and it's also, you're looking at this. This is one thing, man. I wish somebody would make porn that starts when the porn ends, the next scene.
And then she's like doing a pregnancy test. She's fucking got it.
Not just when they're having, like, coffee afterwards. Or I want to see the awkward hour after the crazy sex they just had. I want to see the, like, conversation afterwards. And then I want to see both of them going their separate ways. Her driving in the car, picking her nose. Him, like, sitting by himself in his house, trying to decide, well, what do I do now? I mean, that was that. But now I'm stuck back being human again.
Yeah.
That to me is interesting. That's the trick of porn, and also rom-coms, is that it doesn't show the credits roll on the wedding scene. Show me 2 years later.
Yeah.
Show me 3 years later. Show me 6 years later. That's what I want to see. I want to see a rom-com 6 years later. I want to see the sequel 6 years fucking later.
And it goes back to that whole notion of happiness versus peacefulness.
Yes, it does. And it goes back to, yes. And also it goes back to the notion of, yes, we've been taught to seek out these moments, that there are these moments that we try to get to, these little peaks. We're always ascending. We get to a little peak. In that peak, sex, career stuff, accomplishment, drugs, whatever it is, that's when we're really living. But the climbing up to the peak, somehow we're not even there.
Yeah.
Like on the road, like when you're driving. Even though most people spend the majority of their fucking day driving, a lot of us do, somehow you're not really there. You're just trying to get from point A to point B. That drive is just like a kind of static moment in your life.
Yes.
Like the music is stopped during that moment.
Yeah.
So the thing you're talking about is overcoming this addiction to the delusion that there's these moments of condensed happiness we're going for. And just realize that the whole thing is spectacular. Is it, though? There is boredom. There is sadness. There is suffering. There is anxiety. There is depression.
And that's life. And that's the biggest thing I've learned about, you know, being someone who's sober and, you know, dealing with the sobriety, dealing with life being sober, and this notion that if I cut out drugs and alcohol in my life, that everything I've ever wanted in the world is going to happen. And that there will be nothing but sunshine and blue skies. And that's not the truth. The thing, you know, that's going to happen is you're going to be able to live life. And life has some good moments and life has some dark moments.
Yeah.
And you got to come to grips with those dark moments. It's going to happen to everybody at all times. There's not a person on this planet that hasn't had a down moment.
Nope.
And a moment where they're like, "What? Why is life shitting on my chest?"
Yeah,
I guarantee you the Dalai Lama had that moment going, why are you shitting on my chest?
Yeah, he did. His fucking homeland was taken over by the goddamn Chinese.
Right?
He's had the Chinese. You know the Dalai Lama is the fucking Bin Laden of the Chinese. Did you know that? They look at him the way we look at Bin Laden.
Unbelievable.
They didn't want fucking Obama to meet with him. They look at him as a terrorist. The Dalai Lama is a terrorist.
Unbelievable.
Think about that. You're right, man. You're absolutely right. This is a fundamental component of the human experience, is that we aren't going to be happy all the time.
All the time. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you had an abundance of money to do anything you want with all the time. You will get depressed at some point.
Yes.
It's just life. Shit's going to happen. You can't, you know, I'm dealing with this situation right now with a friend of mine who all they want is life on life's terms, on their terms. And that is not life.
Right.
You can't dictate life.
Right.
You can't. You can't force everybody. Life is not a play that you are choreographing.
No.
You can't. Hey, Duncan, I need you to do this at this time. You got to do that.
Right.
Because this is my life. Yeah. And I'm controlling it. You can't. You got to have life on life's terms. And
yeah.
Sometimes those terms can be a little bit down and out. And it's how you deal with those that determine whether you get through them.
Right.
Because some people focus on those negative things, and that becomes a focal point of their life. And then they're running around going, why is fucking life shitting on my chest?
I'm meditating. I'm sober. I'm drinking water all the time. I did a detox diet. I've been nice to dogs. I'm helping
right.
homeless, yet I still feel terrible.
Yes. It but happens.
It Well, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's just right. And it's the resistance to that sense of anxiety. That's the big problem, isn't it? It's the fact that when it's the idea that if you're feeling bad, you must be doing something wrong.
Right. And that's all therapy is deprogramming you from that.
You go to therapy?
I did for a short time. And I would go back. I'm not necessarily saying it's not good. It's good sometimes just to be able to talk to somebody and they got to listen.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, if you just try to talk to some friend about what's going on in your life, they immediately talk about how their life is worse than that.
Yes.
You're like, that's not what I want to talk about. I want to just talk. I just want to, sometimes it's good to get it out.
Yeah.
But with a therapist, you can just dump on them.
Yes.
And they got to deal with it.
They do.
But really what they're doing is just decoding your programming that you got to be happy.
Right. Yeah, man. What was it Freud said? Something about like how to, the idea of therapy is to get to a normal level of suffering.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, and that is, you know, in Buddhism they talk about this. They call it, I can't remember, there's a great name for it, like fundamental unhappiness or something. Like just in just being human itself, you're going to feel bad. And so that's the first, you're going to feel lonely, you're going to feel sad, you're going to feel distracted, you're going to feel confused, you're going to feel anxious. That's just what it is to be alive.
That's to be alive, man.
So take it easy on yourself.
Yeah.
If you're feeling so goddamn bad, stop thinking that you're doing something wrong or that there's a demon, you know, riding around on your back, punching you in the head, and just realize like, no, you feel bad because that's just what it is to be alive. That's just part of what it is. And and that's called surrender. That's what they call surrender.
I pull young comics, well, they pull me aside and they're always like, what advice can you give me?
Yeah.
Which always makes me feel old. If you give yourself advice when you were young, I'm like, okay, I'll forget that you just called me old. What advice would you give me? And the advice I always say is this. Nothing matters.
Mm.
You're not as high as your best set. You're not as low as your worst set.
Yeah.
You can go into an audition, kill it, and not get called back. You can bomb in an audition, and they book you for the show. It doesn't matter. Don't fucking live and die by every fucking event in your life.
Oh, that's great.
It's the truth, man. I've seen it happen.
What a relief.
So many times. Nothing matters. It doesn't matter. You know, not getting into names or anything, but I've seen so many comics where I'm like, explain that to me. Explain that career to me. There was a time where I'd be like, explain that career to me. You can't. It doesn't matter. You know? It's like like someone could be the worst comic in the world and have the greatest career ever. Or someone could be the greatest comic ever and no one's ever heard of them.
Right.
And they will never. Because it is what it is.
Yeah.
So just, you know, live your life. Be happy with it. And that's really the truth.
It's like a bunch of toddlers or a bunch of kids got together and they started playing a game of make-believe. I'm going to be a comic. You be a cop. You be a doctor. You be a president.
Yeah.
And it's like a weird comet flew over It made them all forget they were playing a game of make-believe, and they all started taking it so seriously. Can you imagine watching kids play like a game of make-believe and one of them starts weeping because the other one is like, well, I guess they do that.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
Well, that's the tendency, man, because it is a game of make-believe. It's like, I'm a comic. This is what I am. I'm a comic. I'm an artist. I'm a writer. I'm a doctor. I'm a laborer. I'm just somebody who works at a desk, or I'm a fucking emperor, whatever it is you think you are. You're the one deciding.
Right.
You're the one creating that in every moment. That's your baggage. I love what you're saying, man, because you're saying, just let go of that.
Yeah. It's like there is no rhyme or reason to any of it. Don't try to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's just weird politics out of your hands. It's all out of your hands. I think that's the best thing I ever learned getting sober, is what a small part of the big world I am. And then now everybody's thinking about me all the 24/7. And that just doesn't fucking matter. I'm just a small fucking speck of shit on the Earth's dick.
Oh, my God. You don't see... You know what, man? If you're a speck of shit on the Earth's dick, then the Earth is putting its dick in the right place. Because you're a wonderful person, man.
Right. But my point is, it's like the universe isn't revolving around me.
Thank God. What a mess that would be.
Wouldn't that? Who wants that kind of a pressure?
Nobody wants that. Like, poor Putin right now and Obama and all these people who've managed to get in the front of this crazy goddamn...
I was doing stand-up last night at the Comedy Store.
Please tell me Putin was there.
No, he canceled, so I got his spot.
It was weird, you saw Putin...
Please allow 10
Vladimir
minutes.
Putin is hilarious. For you guys who don't know, he started off at the Comedy Store.
You know what's cool? He's bringing back prop comedy.
I love his thing with the beaver.
Yeah, right? It's like, dude, why isn't anyone doing that?
I don't know.
It's back.
But he's got to want to get back into the stand-up
with
game.
His shirt off, it's so crazy.
Guys, if you ever get a chance to see Vladimir Putin perform, because I guarantee he's going to get back into it after this Ukraine shit.
Oh, yeah, dude. This is the press he needed to launch it.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm starting to think this whole thing in the Ukraine
is about Twitter followers.
Yeah.
Because
his Twitter followers have gone up.
Totally. Here's the thing, man. I was doing this set last night, and I was talking to this guy, and I just asked the guy, what's your nationality? And he goes, Mexican. I go, do you speak it? He goes, none. So I go, what generation are you? Are you Home Depot generation, you know, lawn maintenance generation, or middle management and Verizon Wireless generation? And everybody laughed. He laughed. This woman just goes, and I could see her whispering, like, how offended she was by this stupid fucking joke. And I go, lady, are you offended? She goes, yeah, you know, not that wasn't very funny. I go, ma'am, right now, there's a war about to go on in the Ukraine where women, children who have nothing to do with it are going to die. Save your anger for that.
Yeah, because
that's something really to get offended about.
Yeah.
You're in a fucking nightclub where known for cocaine and mobsters shooting people. And it's a comedy show. It's a joke. He's laughing. They're having fun. How do you know? What do you know about? Are you Mexican? She's like, no, I'm from Venezuela. I go, another thing, a white chick fucking thinking Venezuelans and Mexicans are the same people. You know,
right.
That's offensive right there. And you just go into it. It's like, it's jokes, man. Don't take it all so serious.
Yeah, man. This poor kid, I don't know I tweeted... I yelled at a pregnant lady, and I tweeted, I just yelled at a pregnant lady because I couldn't believe I
And for real?
It.
For real life?
For real, I yelled at a pregnant lady.
Okay.
And I'd like, honest to God, man, that day I had been, speaking of like helping people, like I saw this YouTube video, I've talked about it too much on this podcast, but like I'd like been doing some shit, like giving stuff out to the homeless, and I was feeling really like fucking holy, dude. Like I felt...
No, I can't believe that you just... One second, you just teed off on some chick.
I'm walking my dog. No, I'm jogging.
Okay.
I'm jogging. So I'm having this great day. I'm in control, man. And, like, I've been meditating. I'm feeling really, like, high-level consciousness, in tune with the angels. I'm jogging into my jog. This pregnant lady comes padding down the path with a big fucking dog off-leash next to her. She's on her phone. not paying attention to the dog. The dog comes running right up to me.
Dude, that's some scary shit. I've been there.
Starts growling at me, and because she's pregnant. Dogs know when people are pregnant, so that poor dog just feels like he's got to protect this moron who's not paying attention to anything. She's on the phone, padding down a path with a living being growing inside of her, and the dog's probably like, "God damn it! Any one of these people could kill you and eat the baby," because that's what dogs do.
Yeah, they're just lovers
and
protectors.
So it's growling at me. And so I was like, ah. And so I screamed. I'm like, get your fucking dog on a leash, idiot. And like, because if the dog, I'm trying to justify it, but if the dog bites you,
right,
that dog, they'll put it down. The
dog gets 100%.
Euthanized. Anyway, it doesn't matter. No excuse. You shouldn't yell at pregnant ladies.
You
shouldn't yell at anybody. And I tweeted, just yelled at a pregnant lady, and some poor kid. What was it he tweeted back to me? He's some kid, man. He's like in high school, and he was trying to be funny, and he tweeted back, what, was she fucking breastfeeding in public? Kind of funny, you know what I mean? Like, of course I'd never yell at someone breastfeeding in public. No one cares about that.
Too busy beating off.
Yeah, there you go. That's what it is. See? And the response, though, I don't know. Someone following me is like one of these, like, feminist bloggers who feel like they've got to like defend language, and so all of a sudden this woman is writing to him like, that is crass and unfunny, and the kid's like, oh, you know, I was just joking, it just is a real joke, I really don't care about that stuff. And then another one piles on, and another one, somebody tweeted to him, you should know that what goes on the internet stays on the internet forever. And then I wrote, oh yeah, I'm sure he's like, his career's destroyed from tweeting that. And they're like, well, it might hurt him from getting a job. This kid keeps writing back in this really logical way. Like, I didn't mean any harm by it. I thought it would be a funny
might keep him from getting a job. Like, why would you even threaten that? Why is that? Why is it that these people want to take away freedom? Both sides, both the far, far left and the far, far right. Just all they want to do is take away freedoms of people to create a utopia in their fucking eyes.
Well, I mean, also, what's more lazy than that level of Twitter activism? By directly confronting a teen, you think you're gonna do anything to affect the very valid cause of women who think they should be allowed to breastfeed in public. I don't know if that's illegal or not, but obviously that should happen. There's nothing wrong with it.
It's the most primal of things you could do, a mother feeding its child.
Beautiful thing to do. It should be done everywhere, even if you don't.
I completely
agree.
Even
if you don't have a baby, you should be breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Anything.
I try to feed kids all the time.
Yeah. It shouldn't be limited to women either.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Like, I thought, should it be? Am I allowed to get Plan B?
No, it's injections. There should be some new implants.
Oh, I thought Plan B was a pill.
Oh, what do you mean, Plan B?
The Plan B, the birth control pill.
Yeah, if you get pregnant, you take it in the it kills the pregnancy.
Oh, I thought Plan B was something that you take as a pill. Like, girls go to the pharmacy and they buy Plan B and they take it. Can I buy it?
You can have Plan B on hand.
I can?
Probably not the most romantic thing to have out on your mantle. Hey, darling, there's my Plan B.
Well, what I do is I crush it up and I act like it's cocaine and I have them do rails on it.
Oh, God. You just offended me, Sam Tripoli. I love being offended. It's fun. Anytime I get offended, it's like, wow.
That's life, dude.
It's a kind of rush to get
offended.
That's
such life. I mean, that's not real to think that everyone can love, be like that one person is the comedy police. And that because you didn't like it, it's wrong. It's like, so what?
I guarantee that whatever your cause is, if you're trying to battle comedians for the sake of your cause, you're guaranteed you're going in the wrong direction. And you're not doing it in a smart way. It's like there's really clever ways to get across a lot of the things that people are trying to get across that don't involve directly confronting people who have the same mentality
I completely
that most
agree,
high
dude.
School teenagers have, which is like, oh, you're offended? Oh, I'm going to turn the volume up to 700 now. It's not going to work. It's like, there's all these things are really valid, you know, but it's just like the cause, the reason, you have to decide what are you doing? This is the thing that these people have taught me. The love servant Raghu Marcus and Ram Dass and great teachers, they always teach again and again and again this idea, which is that we are all one thing.
Yes.
We're all one thing.
Yes.
And the impulse to divide and fight and create them and us it doesn't work. It never works. The idea is, how can we figure out a way, instead of you're a you and I'm a me and I'm right and you're wrong, how can we figure out a way to, like, not to, to overcome?
Dude, there's parts of Africa where they're fighting, and it's like, because they basically can tell a difference by their noses. If you have a different type of nose, you're one side.
Right.
And they're just killing each other.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's absurdity. It's absurdity.
It is absurdity. And it's just like my theory that deep down inside, 99% of the people in the world would love to be a third world dictator. They would love to just run and control everything, yes, and tell everybody what to do. And you just see it, man. It's like, what is this whole thing about reality stars? In particular, you know, it's like, reality stars are just like people just want to be third world dictators. They just want to be famous for nothing, and they want people to give them money and give them shit, and they don't want to have any particular skill or nothing. They just want to be famous for waking up in the morning.
Look at what you just said, man. It's so smart. If you, this is the task. Realize what part of you is the third world dictator.
Yeah.
And start rehabilitating that. Just do that. Because I know exactly what you mean. I am a third world dictator sometimes. Sometimes I seek vengeance, or someone will wrong me and I'll...
Iron fist.
Iron fist, my enemies shall fall.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right, man. That's where you start. Don't look at Putin. Don't turn to the 17-year-old who made a pregnancy joke on Twitter. Turn inside of yourself.
100%.
Find that dictator living inside your brain. Find that little fucking medallioned, bejeweled, camouflage wearing, cocaine smuggling third world dictator living inside of you, and see if you can transform that into a sweetie.
You know, watching the Oscars last night, you know, there's no difference between those ultra progressives that you see in that theater and compared to the people who, like, run Hollywood, these old white guys.
Right.
They're all the same, dude. They just want people who around them to remind them how awesome they are,
right,
or how awesome they think they are. Everybody in that theater, they're all the same people.
Right.
And then on the opposite end is, it's all the same people are in Washington, D.C. They're all the same.
Yeah.
They all have to think alike, and they just get this pack mentality, you know? So you got this thing in Hollywood where it's like, oh, we're open mind. No, you're progressive, and you have a very idealistic world view of what the world is. And that's not reality. That's your particular view of the world. And the people who fit into that world, you like to encourage and right, support. Same thing in, like, let's say Nashville or Dallas, Texas, or wherever. You know, it's like Atlanta. You just get pack mentalities of people who think alike, and that's the world that they believe in, you know? And it's just like the notion that the people who are at the Oscars are such fucking progressive people and open mind everything is total bullshit. It's total bullshit, dude. It's all third world dictator bullshit. They open the mind. They're like, hey, open mind to gay and minorities and everybody, blah, 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 which I'm for. But at the end of the day, they just really want them. They want them, and they want them, the people like them, to have all the power and all the riches and all that stuff.
Right.
It's no different, man. It's no different. Hollywood is no different than Washington, D.C. And they're two totally different people on the end of the spectrum, and yet they all work exactly alike.
And the trick is to find out where Hollywood and D.C. live inside of you.
Yeah.
Find out where you're like that. Figure out where that is. Where
people want a world, dude. And I said this on Rogan's podcast before. People want a world that plays to their strengths and outlaws their weaknesses.
Wow.
And that's just the truth.
Huh. Wow. Wow. That is cool, man. What's the world people should want?
People should want a world where people are allowed to do what makes them happy as long as they're not hurting other people.
Right.
It's like my view of sex. I really don't care what you do with consenting adults. I don't give any of it. If they are consenting adults, it should be perfectly acceptable.
Of course.
Now, I'm not saying we should just all go around telling everybody what we do, but there shouldn't be any kind of stigma attached to it,
right,
that you're in the autoerotic asphyxiation.
Right.
Right? Just get a spotter. That's all I ever say. Just get a spotter.
Get a spotter, because that's an embarrassing funeral.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I do that joke about the guy who died having sex with a horse. I go, imagine going to that funeral. Everybody crying from laughing so hard. Which is on my new CD that should be out by the end of the week.
Yeah, and you're going on tour soon, right, Sam?
I'm very excited. Can I tell you what tour
please.
I'm doing? Oh, this is perfect, dude. I'm so thankful to be on your show, dude.
Man, every time you come by,
every time I go,
it.
Man, I come on your show, I'm like, man, this is why this show is so fucking popular.
It's... Man, look, I feel like I'm going to get addicted to cocaine just so I can have you as my sponsor.
Don't
to get
do
off.
It. Don't do it. I mean, dude, the whole reason cocaine's popular is because women kidding. Like to do weird shit on it.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's the only reason
don't
everybody
tell
likes
my
coke.
Audience that.
That's the only reason.
He doesn't mean it,
nobody
friends.
Wants to put chalk up their nose. So listen, on March 18th, I'm very excited. I'm going to be in Portland at the Fun House. I'm going to be with some very funny comics. Jonas Barnes, Christina Levine, Lonnie Buran, and Lauren Petrie. So it's going to be a really funny show. It's going to be at the Fun House, March 18th, Portland. Then the following night, I'm in Seattle. I'm at the High Line with Darren Chase, Kelsey Cook. And I don't know if you've met this guy. Have you ever done Seattle with Rogan?
With Rogan?
Yeah. The Voodoo Chicken? Have you ever met Voodoo Chicken?
No, I know Voodoo Chicken from Rogan's website. I think I did meet him once, but I'm not positive.
He's
but...
gigging with me. And, you know, I've been very blessed that Bogart LA, Jessica Bogart.
Yeah, she's hooking up all these tours.
Put these tours together. She works really hard. It's going to be a lot of fun. So March 18th, I'm in Portland. And March 19th, I'm in Seattle. I hope you guys can come out because I'm going to put on a crazy fucking show.
Go to DuncanTrussell.com. I'll have links to these shows so you guys can get tickets. Definitely go out and see Sam Tripoli because he is a hilarious, irreverent, beautiful comic. You should definitely go see him. That's a fun night.
I love coming on your show, dude.
I love having you here, Sam. I want you to come back. And what's your website?
SamTripoli.com.
And your Twitter?
Sam Tripoli.
Follow Sam Tripoli.
TRIPOLI.
Go to his website. Thanks a lot, Sam.
Anytime, brother.
Later, man. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Sam Tripoli. Go see him live. And if you like this podcast, won't you give us a nice rating on iTunes? Thanks for listening. Until next time, I love you.